From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I am from Livermore.
I'm from East Oakland.
Oakland, near Lake Merritt.
Alameda, California.
Coming up, we're unveiling our brand new production, The Stoop. Stories about Black identity that aren't always shared in the open.
It's like a griot, a newsroom, a hair salon, and your mama's kitchen, all in one.
On today's Stoop, why is it so hard for some Black people to say, I love you?
I love you.
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 We will break it down and we'll ask Black men if they grew up hearing the words, I love you.
For me, like the idea of like telling them I love them, it's sort of like the cement between the bricks.
KALW News is proud to present The Stoop. Stick around. I'm Hannah Baba.
And I'm Leela Day.
Hey, Leela, I'm so excited that you're joining me today.
Yes, because today we're sharing something we've been working on, our brand new podcast,
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop. The Stoop.
Stories about Black identity that aren't always shared in the open.
Shh, girl, we can't say that.
It's like a griot,
a hair salon,
a newsroom,
and your mama's kitchen, all in one.
The Stoop. So, a backstory to The Stoop. Leela and I have been working in the KALW newsroom for years together, and we always had these side conversations about things,
Black things,
mm-hmm.
The scarf and the fro. I'm African-American from Las Vegas. Hana is an African immigrant from Sudan.
Right. So while society looks at us and maybe sees a monolith, we have very different life experiences. And that's what we want to talk about on The Stoop.
So on The Stoop, we're going to be talking about how we speak.
Listen to how you talk like a white girl.
About being a Black immigrant in America.
This is not what I signed up for. This is going to be tough.
We'll explore Black identity and what it means.
You know, it's just melanin popping, dashiki dust spraying, and I love every minute of it.
So do we.
Yes.
So you guys are going to get a sneak peek into The Stoop through an episode that's dear to our hearts. It's called,
Why Is It So Hard for Some Black Folks to Say, I Love You? Well, to get some insight, we're going to start in a kind of unusual place.
Take it away.
What is going on? Where are we?
Hana, I'm in bed with my parents.
We're in your parents' bed?
You guys got a lot of thick covers on here.
Yeah, we like it cozy.
I wanted to ask them a question.
When you were growing up, did your parents say, I love you?
Never. I guess the parents thought their job was just to teach you or raise you well. And raising you well might mean a spanking, but it didn't mean I love you, saying I love you all the time.
Generation is weak. They're always looking for praise, love, and everything that you can say. For some reason...
So, Leela, did you hear I love you growing up in Las Vegas?
Not like I heard my white friends say it. I mean, like, they threw it around like goodbye or something like that, you know?
Oh, like, love you, bye, love
yeah,
you.
Like yeah, it was so nice. It sounded so easy, and I wanted to sound like them.
Mm. But it seems for some Black folk, it's not that easy, right? And that's what we're stupid about today.
Yep.
Why is it hard for some of us to say I love you?
Let's get back into bed with my mom and dad.
I think Lou comes from a generation where men had to be tough. And saying I love you just wasn't appropriate because it was something said, you know, in private or personal or reserved for a woman. And it wasn't a matter of bringing somebody up, telling them I love you all the time.
Your woman is speaking for you. What do you think about that?
I don't think she should speak for me. It's just that, you know, the bond was so tight that they know they could come to you if they're in trouble or anything, and you wouldn't let nobody mess with them. They knew that that was the love that they wanted to be assured of. I could go do this or that, and, you know, he'd be right with me. He got my back. And that's what love meant then.
Aww.
Oh, so sweet, Daddy.
Yeah.
So what'd your parents say when you asked them?
Well, I asked them how come they don't say I love you to us. Mm-hmm. This is what I got.
What? So nada.
Yeah, they didn't have much to say because in our family and really a lot of Sudanese folks around me, families don't really say I love you to each other.
So when you get off the phone, there's no, I love you, bye.
No, no. It's not I love you per se. There's a lot of Allah salimik, Allah barik fi, God keep you safe, God bless you. So more of well wishes. So my parents said saying things like that shows that they love me. They don't have to say it literally.
Yeah, I got it.
Mm-hmm. And then all that I love you talk.
I love you.
I love you. It's just soap opera talk where I'm from. And they hear it a lot on TV. Hmm. Cue the sappy music. So this is a scene from a famous Arab soap opera. And the woman just discovered her lover is married.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to win her back in this long monologue, and he's in tears. He says, I love you. I love you. Look me in the eyes. I love you. Ana bahibbik.
Ana bahibbik. Ana bahibbik. I love you. Ana bahibbik.
Yeah. There you go, Lila Day.
Got it.
You got it. So in Sudan, they hear those words every day, but on the TV. In real life, not so much. But hey, we're not the only ones. I found a study.
A study, uh-huh.
Right, in the International Journal of Intercultural Relations. Mm. They said many cultures don't say I love you all the time either.
Okay.
Including Black, Chinese, Greek, Syrian, Armenian, Korean. A lot of them said I love you isn't part of their regular talk.
Interesting. But, you know, saying it does make a difference.
Uh-huh.
I found a study, too.
A study?
Psychology studies do show that hearing I love you is important for good emotional development, especially in children.
Yeah, but what if it's just not part of the culture? For example, many Black men say they're raised to be tough and not show emotion, maybe because that would be perceived as unmasculine or weak. Some research directly links it to the systemic oppression of Black men.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's been on my mind a lot. And there's one place that I go that makes me think about it even more.
Where's that?
San Quentin State Prison. I work with the inmate radio reporters there.
Right.
And there's one thing I always notice.
What's that?
Everybody sort of looks like a relative of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So this got me thinking about love and hearing I love you and saying it. And I started wondering if the men inside grew up hearing the words too.
Hmm.
Do they hear it now? Does it even matter?
I'm playing acoustic bass guitar at San Quentin State Prison.
And I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you? I love you, LA.
I love you. I did not grow up hearing the words, I love you.
I don't remember. I don't remember my mother saying it. But she was affectionate. She always wanted to kiss you and hug you, and I used to hate that.
I've accepted it wasn't, even though it wasn't shared in my family that often. The word loves and the feeling of love and being loved, shown love.
I heard the words, but I didn't actually understand what love meant. It really didn't matter for me.
No, we never said that in our family. Like you said, in our household, we never even said that to each other. But you knew the love was there.
My name is Legend Brooks.
My name is Lewis A. Scott.
My name is Lionel Scott.
My name is Antoine Williams. And I've been incarcerated 10 years and I've been in San Quentin for 5. In the household I grew up in, the term love was always attached. I love you so much, I hit you. Or, because I love you, you make me crazy. I do this because I love you.
That was one of the strong points that my mother and father had to offer us because they come from a really poor family. And I think by them always assuring us that we were loved was a unique thing.
No, not in my household. Not in my household. I heard a lot of violence, a lot of arguing, a lot of fights, you know.
I grew up in a project, so my community, it just different kind of infections you was getting. It was a hate infection, but they loved you, but they hated you. It was all kind of like different love affections I was receiving.
Like, all my life, I grew up acting hard. And everybody around me was acting hard. And we act like we didn't care about anything. And we act like we didn't have feelings. And we act like we had to fight because everybody was watching. And we both know, and deep down inside, we really don't want to fight. But we feel that these are the roles we got to play.
No, we never said that in our family. Like you said, in our household, we never even said that to each other. But you knew the love was there. But far as the words, never heard the words. My name is Clarence Long. Everybody calls me Clay. I've been in prison 32 years. On this number. My first time coming to prison was in 1977, but I got out in 82 and came back in 85. I didn't start hearing the words until 86 when I came to Folsom Prison. And so many people was getting murdered, I started calling home and saying, I love you. And then they start saying it back. And it was a different feeling. It was a feeling of something that was needed. Because we never even said those words to each other, but it felt good to hear it.
My name is Dorothy Jackson, and I'm Clarence Long's cousin. When I would go to visit, he just seemed to really, really appreciate it. You know, my visit, my showing of love for him.
I remember on a visit, my cousin came up to visit me, and she touched me on my leg.
I love you.
And I didn't really know it was just a trip, and it was kind of that old family love. And I hadn't felt that.
And I just think he feels that someone cares about him.
And the thing, it was just powerful, right?
In prison, I tell my close friends I love them every night. My name is Shy Wallace Stepter. And a friend of mine, you know, he really explained it to me, like, listen, man, this isn't nothing gay. This isn't anything to make you seem like a punk or soft. This is just like because I really got love for you. You know, we sitting out here on these yards and I'm willing to risk my life for you. You know, I'm willing to go to the hole. I'm willing to defend you. I'm willing to protect you. And from that comes from a place of love. You know what I mean? And once he explained that to me, you know, I've gotten over all my hangups of saying, you know, love to another man. I love you.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba.
And I'm Leela Day. And you're listening to a special KALW news presentation of our brand new podcast, The Stoop.
So Leela, in this episode, we're talking about love and why it may be hard for some Black people to say, I love you.
Right, Hannah. And we just heard from some men inside San Quentin talking about saying and hearing, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to go deeper and stoop this out some more.
That's right. So we talked to a brother, radio host of Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting.
And playwright Al Letson.
Do you hear that? That ball bouncing on asphalt, ringing in the emptiness of a small court somewhere near here.
That's Al Letson in a scene from his one-man play, Summer in Sanctuary.
One boy, one ball, one dream, one hoop. Shh, listen. Slowly stepping up the foul line, eyeing metal rim whose orange paint has chipped or faded years ago. Eyeing hoop, then ball, then ball, then hoop. Then aim, extend, small jump, release. And the ball
flows through the air, defying gravity, nearing the rim, and he scores!
So he wrote this play about a time he was teaching creative writing to some boys in Jacksonville, Florida. That's his hometown.
So this wasn't from a neighborhood Al grew up in, but a place he thought that he could make a difference. You know, Al's black, the kids are black.
So yeah, he performed this skit, and he thought it would have them hooked, you know, combining basketball and poetry and some beats.
But their reaction wasn't what he was hoping.
I have this clear memory of one of the girls saying, he trying to act like he playing basketball. You know, like
in the middle of the performance.
Yes. Like, yes. And you know, that was, yeah, exactly. So when I was done with that poem, I remember specifically Nina going, psh, child boo.
But they were hard to impress.
Man, they didn't care.
They didn't care.
They did not care at all.
Child boo. Mm-hmm. Child boo.
Who were these kids? Why were you working with them? Why were you there?
The Sanctuary on 8th Street is a community center in Jacksonville, Florida. And it's a summer camp for kids, and it's an after-school program for kids. And these kids are really, really poor kids. I worked there because I wanted to make a difference. Like, my heart was pure in that. But my heart was also, Hollywood had lied to me about what that looks like. So yeah, I went there to work with these kids, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I failed at every single turn. But in the process, I did fall in love with them, and they fell in love with me too. Although like the way their love looks is really different. They weren't raised around people telling you I love you. They weren't raised around that kind of stuff, and at the end of it, like I felt like a complete and utter failure. And I actually wrote the play to figure that out, because I did feel like I failed. And if I didn't write the play, I don't know how I would have. I think that it would still be a scar. Now it doesn't feel like a scar. Now it feels like I understand what I got and what I did and what I gave. You know, I think that what the movies tell us is that, like, you go in, you do this, and everything will work out, and everybody walks out okay. And you know, it's not how it worked at all. And I also think that I bought into the idea of being like some kind of savior. Like I was going to go in and save in these kids, and I was going to change something. And, you know, nothing could be further from the truth, you know? So it was like learning what reality is like. It was learning about poverty, learning about me, like my own motivations for things. And it was a hard, hard lesson. It was one of the hardest things that I've ever done in my life.
But I wanna piggyback on that idea of what black parents instill in black children, specifically black boys. There seems to be a lot in our interviews, but also a lot of literature about black male emotional expression, and that black boys were taught historically not to show emotion, to be tough, for survival reasons, really. Did you hear that, or was that a message that was, did you live something like that where you were expected to be tough? Don't cry, you know?
Yeah.
Don't show weakness.
Not so much from my dad. My dad was never like, you shouldn't cry. But from my extended family, like my uncles, I had some uncles that were like tough dudes. That I loved dearly, but they were very, man up type dudes. I had an uncle, my mother's brother, who his thing was he used to pick me up and throw me in the air and catch me. But he was also an alcoholic. And one day he picked me up, threw me in the air, and forgot to catch me. I don't know how he forgot. I fell and I scraped up my knees, and he literally was like, if you cry, I'm gonna beat you right here. I did get those messages of toughen up a lot. I think that the thing that my dad taught me that sticks to me today, which I still believe is true, is that I have to be better than the other people that are competing for the same type of jobs, that are, you know, whatever it is in life that you're trying to achieve from, like, you have got to be better. And I think that when you look at America today, it holds true. I mean, just looking at like where we are politically, Barack Obama, like the accomplishments that he had before he got into the White House are just stunning, you know, just stunning. And the academic accomplishments that our current president has, the disparity between the two is huge, you know. And I'm not saying that to diss the current president. I'm saying that to say that, like, as an African-American to compete, you have to, like, be better. You have to be the best you possibly can be. And so I heard that over and over and over, and it sticks with me today. I think that, you know, I'm always striving for excellence based off of, like, the stuff that my father taught me. And my father, like, you know, he's a cat that, like, grew up, and the guidance counselor at his school told him that, like, the best he could do in life is be a janitor. So he's coming from that viewpoint.
So you're saying with your kids that you definitely, you're open about saying I love you, but do you think it's because you didn't hear it as much, or you want to convey something different for your own kids?
I think that, so I got custody of my kids, and they moved out here from Florida, and they've been here for a little less than a year now. And it's been an amazing experience, like parenting, and parenting in a way that I think is much more, what's the word? Because my kids like are in a whole new place, and because it's kind of like just us, like I'm being very purposeful and thinking about like how I parent. Where I think before that, like I was purposeful in the sense of like, yeah, you want your kids to be in a good school and you want blah, blah, blah. But I wasn't like purposeful necessarily in their emotional lives. And so for me, like the idea of like telling them I love them, it's sort of like the cement between the bricks. Like I got all the bricks. Like I'm feeding them. I'm making sure they're in a good school. I'm doing all the things that like you got to do as a parent. But the cement that sticks it together is them understanding that all of this comes from a place of love. I will say that like there's been this interesting shift though in the last 10 years. So like I'm in my 40s. I would say that like somewhere around my mid 30s, late 30s, me and my boys, these cats that I grew up with, and we've done this thing where suddenly like we were getting off the phone and someone said, yo, I love you. And I was like, I love you too.
I don't know.
Was it hard? You know, I think that the first person that started it was my boy Jamel, who was like the most unlikely to start it. I mean, like, you know, and he can't say like I love you, dog. He's got to use like the N-word. He's like, yo, I love you, nigga, you know what I'm saying, like that kind of thing. But that's relatively like a new thing, you know, like we never would have done that as kids, never. I guess maybe that we're older, I guess maybe that like, you know, times have changed, and maybe it's like that we're all like at an age where like you know, our sexuality isn't questioned. You know, I think that like growing up as a black man in the South, the idea of like sexuality being fluid or any of the kind of conversations we have now was not a conversation, you know, and you had to stay within those lines completely. And if you crossed over those lines, then suddenly like you just were not, the acceptance wasn't there. So maybe it's like we are older and have like, we all know who we are, you know.
Many thanks to Al Letson. Catch his one-man show, Summer in Sanctuary, at the Marsh Theater in San Francisco through March 18th.
And that's it for The Stoop. The Stoop team includes managing producer Julie Kane,
engineer Chris Hoff,
music by Daoud Anthony,
and Mazen Jamal.
Also, special thanks to Seth Samuel.
Today's Cross Currents production team includes Olivia Henry, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Kaval Roop Singh, and Andrew Stelzer. The line producer was Liza Veal. Jen Sheehan is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet.
The Stoop is supported by the NPR Story Lab. Our radio home is KALW. Check us out at thestoop.org.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and then let us know what you think. We're on Facebook and Twitter at The Stoop Podcast.
I'm Leela Day.
And I'm Hannah Baba.
I love you, Hannah.